Okay, hi guys. Welcome to Tiet number 5. We are the Lit Wallflowers. I'm Tonya Rose.
And I'm Wendy Wu.
And today we're gonna break down episode 3.
Art of the Swoon.
Yeah. But first we want to do some buzzy updates. This past weekend, if you missed it, The Ballad of Burbrook was released.
Oh my god. It was Beamish. So good.
Oh, he has pipes.
He can sing.
Love it. But then again, like, he was playing the piano and then you have like guitars in the background.
Yeah. I feel like part of British acting is you have to know how to do all of that, because all of the actors and actresses on, well, most of the actors can sing.
I think, if I remember correctly, Tom Hiddleston, Loki, he said that part of his audition for going into one of those like drama schools, they had to sing also. So it kind of makes sense. And because I think they have to do that for theater too. And a lot of the time when they go into drama school, it's for theater.
Yeah.
And then branch off into film, like Will Monrick.
Yeah.
So there's that. Go listen to it. It's amazing. I love that he kind of laughs in the middle. And at the end, he's like turning to the side and he's like, I can't believe I just did that.
And I love that he's like, I'm jobless, so I would like to audition for the Bridgerton Broadway show if there is one.
That was really funny. He's amazing.
So good.
Please follow him, folks, on Twitter and Instagram.
He's hilarious.
It's great. Hashtag everybody hates Nigel. We also got some news about nominations for the 52nd NAACP Image Awards, which is the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, which is the largest and most preeminent civil rights organization in the nation. And it has a mission to secure the political, educational, social, and economic equality of rights in order to eliminate race-based discrimination and ensure the health and well-being of all persons.
Yes.
It was amazing to hear that Regé Jean Page was nominated for Outstanding Actor in a Drama Series.
Yes.
And Joa Ando was nominated for Outstanding Supporting Actress in a Drama Series. Sorry, I don't know if I'm saying her name correctly, but Lady Danbury.
Yeah.
And Bridgerton was nominated for the Outstanding Drama Series. It is going live on Saturday, 27th. 8/7 Central. You can RSVP for the virtual event online. Just go to naacpimageawards.net, and you can also go in and you can vote.
So, oh god, we need to vote.
Yeah, I don't know if you can vote multiple times, probably not, but you can try. But yes, don't forget to vote. And then today, Regé Jean Page, for the SAG Awards, he was nominated for Outstanding Performance by a Male Actor in a Drama Series.
Yes.
So well-deserved. The thing about the SAG Awards is that the nominations for the awards comes from, like, there's two committees, one for film, one for television. Each has, like, 2,100 members, which changes every year. Mm-hmm. So essentially, it's the other actors that are voting for other actors.
It's their peers.
That's such a big,
way better honor.
It's considered an indicator of success by the Academy Awards, too.
Yeah, F the Golden Globes. I'm not bitter. So I woke up for that shit because I was like, there's no way we don't have one nomination at least.
For Golden Globe?
Nothing.
Oh.
I was pissed. Well, and I was so petty. Did you see the post I put?
I did. It was really funny. But, you know, they'll learn. I mean,
that's what they did. They snubbed, I forgot which one, and then they put them in the next year. So
I'm just glad that other people recognize.
Yeah. You know, and that, like I just said, the SAG Awards is a more important one because it's their peers, you know?
Yes.
They also were nominated for Outstanding Performance for Ensemble in a Drama Series in the SAG Awards. Steep competition. Ozark is in there. I think The Crown is in there. So, but just the nomination itself is such an honor. Better Call Saul is in there. So congratulations to everybody. It's so good. I know I'm salty about the Golden Globes, but the SAG Awards is where it's at, you know?
Yeah.
I was really upset about the Critics' Choice Awards, but I was just like, I don't fucking care about critics.
Yeah, critics sometimes, yeah.
I was like, I don't fucking care, but I do care. But I let that one slide. But Golden Globes, I was like, oh, that's fucking rude.
Oh, whatever. It's okay.
Emmys, like, I'm looking at you. I swear to God. I'll fucking, I will never watch you again unless they get nominated next year. But you know what?
Only when they get nominated, we'll watch you. And also, there's the Fane Productions. They have this presentation, A Night In with Bridgerton author Julie Quinn, interviewed by Anjo Ando, 7th at 6:30 p.m. UK time. So you can actually go onto at Julie Quinn author, and on, there's a link in her bio. Or you can go to at Fane Productions on Instagram or fane.co.uk to reserve your spot. For a small fee. There is a fee, but you have options. You can either just stream, or two, you can get a stream and a book for UK delivery, or you could stream and a book for the rest of the world. So just make sure you're choosing accordingly when you're making that reservation. And the copy will be of The Duke and I believe the Netflix edition.
Yeah.
And you have 1 week to view it from the end of that show.
Yes. So Sunday is an important day for me, probably not for anyone else. It's Super Bowl, so I don't know if I'll be able to catch it live. Plus, it's really, really early for us here in Hawaii, but we will see. But yeah, the link is available for an entire week after the show. So if you can't catch it that day, you have a week to look at it. It's £10 for just the show if you already have the book, which equivalents to be about $15 with taxes and fees and stuff like that. So not too bad.
Yeah, to watch that, no, it's not bad at all.
I'll pay way more.
Yeah.
I can't wait.
That's like the big book of The Duke and I, right?
Yeah.
the large edition.
Yes. So, The Duke and I did drop to number 2 in New York Times bestsellers list, but The Viscount Who Loved Me jumped back up to number 3.
Whoa.
So last week it was completely out of the top 5, but this week it jumped back to the number 3, probably because it is finally available again. They reprinted, they restocked shelves. So pretty stoked about that. Check your local bookstores, check your local libraries, see who has it in. And we did mention that we ordered some books from the Book Depository, and we're hoping it's the right editions. They just messaged that they shipped us the Happily Ever After. So let's see if it's the right edition, and then we can hope that it's the right one moving forward. We'll see. And another thing, Bridgerton on Netflix is back at number 1. We are number 1 for 2-3 days now in a row. So I love it. I think Romantically Swept Away said it best. She's just like, you know, everyone wants to see what's new, but then you go back to what's right, what's comfortable. You know, you go to what you like, what's comfortable, what you like. So Bridgerton, as soon as the new shiny little beacon sparkly thing is watched, everyone goes back to home. Everyone comes home to Bridgerton. So that's why we keep
jumping. To the beehive, right?
To the beehive. They come back to the queen. You know, the little bees flutter out a little bit, and they come back because they know what's right. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. Pretty stoked about that. And speaking of Netflix, Netflix now lets you choose your icon of some of the actors from Netflix. And so basically, you could choose who you want your icon to be. We asked, who would you choose? And Romantically Swept Away said that she chose Anthony's icon and renamed herself to Anthony. Hey!
Great job. That's a good one.
I love that so much. And Agent 1967 said she chose the Duke, of course, and changed her profile name to Swoon.
I love that.
I love that so much. Oh my God. It's so good. I'm about to do like one is like Penelope and the other one's Eloise, and then it'll be Pen and then Eloise, Penelope. So when you open it, that's what it says. I don't know. We'll see. What have you guys changed your Netflix icons to? I think it's super cool. The actor that plays Colin chose himself.
But of course.
It's so good. And then Nicola.
That's just him trying to get everyone else to choose him.
Yeah. Right? I mean, Penelope will probably choose Colin as well, too. Because, I mean, why not? Those are our Buzzy updates.
Next, just a little hive cleanup. The one thing we forgot to mention is we talked about family colors and animals. Mm-hmm. Hastings also has a family color, which is gold and red. Just like Lady Danbury, too. Perfect for you. Yes. You belong to the Hastings household.
I do. I'm saying. No, you know what? I belong to Lady Danbury's household. So,
well, that's where Hastings learned everything he knows.
Yeah.
So, they do have the same thing anyway, so.
Yeah. Do you think that he changed his colors?
I don't know if they can, but I don't see why not. If he could, that's something that we have to actually look up.
Yeah.
That we got to go back and watch again.
Yeah, because I think originally the Duke and everyone was all wearing black. Like his fucking soul. No, I'm just kidding. Well, we'll figure that out later.
Yeah. Okay, so let's go into the episode. Episode 3, Art of the Swoon. Mm-hmm. The description is, after Daphne catches the eye of a royal suitor, she turns to Simon for relationship advice. Lady Featherington tries to browbeat Marina into marriage.
Oh, God.
So this is directed by Tom Verica, written by Leila Cohan hyphen Mikio. Sorry if I'm saying that wrong.
No, you're fine.
The show opens up with a scene from a ball at night. So it looks like a continuation of the Vauxhall Pleasure Gardens. And there's like people dancing. There's Daphne and Simon. But it's a little bit more intimate.
So intimate.
There's a tree in the dance floor. And then it creates this canopy with like lantern lightings. Mm. And it's just nice and dark and
handsome and, like him.
That's perfect. And then Simon starts taking off Daphne's glove and just pulling it off. And then when he's done taking it off, everyone kind of just disappears to the side. And on the screen, it's just them dancing. They're just staring at each other and they're about to kiss. And then Daphne wakes up in the middle of the night, breathing heavily, looking confused, wondering why she had that dream. What could it mean?
Yeah.
Does she want Simon?
Like, yeah. I mean, it's obvious. Yes. He doesn't want Simon. But can I say how innocent that dream is? Because I know some of y'all have been having dreams of Simon, and it is not, it does not involve dancing and taking only a glove off and then almost kissing. So that just like kind of shows you like how innocent they are and how they didn't know anything, right? And but she knows she's frustrated. She is sexually frustrated, but in her mind, the most intimate thing that can happen is dancing with no gloves on and him caressing her back and almost kissing, right? That's what's intimate to her because that's all she knows. So yeah. Once again, this whole theme of like how little they know about sex and marital relations or anything like that, or things that happen behind closed doors with men and women. So I like that they did that because it's just kind of like, I know some of y'all had to have dreams with him and it ain't that innocent.
But that was what was scandalous before.
Oh, right? Yeah, absolutely, because that's the only time that you got to really, really talk to them is dancing, and that's the only time you were able to look at each other's eyes that much.
And then the scene goes into the Bridgerton tree, then we go into the promenade, horse riding, two men shooting. We go into town where two ladies are looking at like Lady D's Hat Emporium. I tried to look it up. I'm like, I wonder if that was a real place. But I have to dig a little bit more. We see Daphne kind of just, you know, letting these suitors down while she's walking around town with Rose. And she's like, Rose is on the side, like kind of laughing. Like, like, I can't believe this is happening. This kind of funny, but I feel bad for him. But I'm so happy for her. Kind of.
Kind of look Rose on her face. Rose is great. Rose is so good.
Her. She's so good to her. If that wasn't her servant, they would be best friends.
For sure. Lady Whistledown mentions Daphne has turned down 3 proposals, and that is straight from the book. She turned down 3 proposals already, but Anthony had allowed it because they sucked. But this one, it looked like they were young gentlemen, not decaying dukes, you know. So, you know, and we'll get into that a little bit more about how, you know, some people mentioned that they feel that Daphne only ended up with Simon because she didn't have any other options. So them showing that it was like young, good-looking guys proposing, I like that they did that.
Yeah. And then the scene goes into Gunter's tea shop, which is filmed at, is called Bathrooms at Number 5 Supply Store. That's what it's called. In Bath. And it was actually a real tea shop in Regency, London, with the same name in Berkeley Square in the 19th century. It was owned by Italian pastry chef Domenico Negri, originally called Pot and Pineapple.
Oh, cute!
That is cute. But it was real. It was a real place. It was considered the it place to be.
Number 5, hello?
I know. When I saw that, I'm like, meant to be. Perfect. Yeah. But yeah, that's where you want to go. Be seen.
To be seen, yeah.
Was where the popular kids go.
Yeah, right? Yeah. And if you guys have read book one, then you'll know that when the suitors were all, it was the day after Lady Danbury's ball, and all the suitors were in Daphne's, in the Bridgerton sitting room, and as soon as Simon arrives with his big bouquets of tulips from Holland, Violet promptly ushers everybody out, you know, like she's like get out, and then rushes one of her suitors over to Gunter's. He's like, don't forget, your mother would never forgive me if you're late, you know, like go, you know. So that Gunter's is also mentioned in the book as well.
In the tea shop, we have the twins looking at Simon and Daphne and other members of the ton. We have Rose sitting on a table in the back of Daphne, possibly talking to another maid or chaperone. And we get the infamous spoon-licking scene.
Fuck, man. Ugh.
So close up. Like, Daphne wondering, like, how would it feel to be the spoon or just being licked? She's so mesmerized. And then she gets interrupted by the employee that brings the food in front of them.
I think she's just kind of thinking about kissing, right? She's just like, ugh.
And she just had that dream, too.
I don't... We were imagining how to be licked, but like, I think for her and her innocence, she was just thinking about kissing. But yeah, and as plot trists would say, that was completely, completely romance 101 fan service.
Yes. They talk about how they must continue their ruse until she finds the best match, and they go into this analogy of being in a grand battle. And he's like marshaling the troops. Basically, he's the one bringing all the suitors to her. And you just see like the easiness in the interactions that they go through. Like the wit, the banter. She's so comfortable with him.
And he with her.
Yep. Yeah. Same sense of humor, like everything.
Yeah, I love like when Simon was like, and don't forget handsome. She was like, like she didn't know what to say because he was just like, you know, being his roguish, rakish self. And she's like, do I say yes or do I say no? So it came out a little awkward, but it was so good, so great.
And then we go into the Featherington house where Pen is looking outside and we find out that she's waiting for the post to arrive. Now, when it comes, she runs downstairs, and you have Prue and Philippa conversing, saying that the prince will arrive, and Philippa says she must wear her best dress, and Prue kind of cuts her down. She goes, because it will certainly not be your conversation that's going to hold his attention.
Yeah.
And that's how the book describes her anyway. Philippa is the ditzy daughter. Prue is supposed to be Prue. And then Pen doesn't care. She's just rushing to the footman, inspects the trays, looking for the letter, and she doesn't find what she sees, sighs, and walks away. And then we get Marina in her room. Pen goes in, and apparently they're waiting for a letter from Sir George, who's in Spain, battling with Wellington. Marina, she just plops on her bed, and Pen's like, trying to be very optimistic and telling Marina, let's look at the good things. you know, maybe he's there. A post takes a long time. Look forward to receiving a letter. Or what if he's coming back? And then Lady Featherington and Varley walks in. Pen's face shows like, oh my gosh, I'm going to get scolded. Yeah. Like, I shouldn't be here.
Yeah.
And Lady Featherington says, you shouldn't be cavorting with the expectant.
And she looks so stressed.
Yeah.
She looks so stressed.
And she like sweetly argues that Marina has been stuck in the room forever and she needs like to go outside or some kind of interaction with anybody.
Yeah.
But Lady Featherington sends her away. Of course, Penelope is always on the side.
She's lurking. She's watching outside.
Observing.
But then like even Lady Featherington, when she walks by, it's like she didn't even notice her. She's like, after she leaves, yeah. She's like, whatever.
Oh. Well, maybe she knows her kids. She'll be there. She's not going to go away. She already came into the room when I told her not to, right?
True.
Marina's like, you can't be hiding me forever. Lady Featherington was telling her, this is the plan. You will re-enter society and you will look for a husband, even though Marina doesn't want to. It's about time that you'll be fitted with a new wardrobe and the family colors anyway.
Oh my God.
And then she leaves the room.
I love that.
I love that.
It's time you wear the family colors. What you're wearing is too muted.
Yeah. What you're wearing is too country. I love her country frocks,
I
do. Though.
I love her country frocks, yeah.
Sweet, like flowers and little bouquets on her dresses.
Very, like, chill. Yeah.
Yes, compared to the whole Featherington house.
The butterflies.
And then we go into the Bridgerton drawing room with Violet and the siblings there, sans Francesca, because she's in Bath.
Yeah.
With Aunt Winnie. I noticed that this is a scene where we finally get to see Colin eating. Yeah. Or he's at least getting food. Because in the books, he's the one who's always eating.
Yeah.
Everyone knows to order food for him. Everyone knows to order extra food for him. Butlers know to order food when he's there. So it's nice to see that. But they did say that they did have to cut a lot of his eating scenes.
Yeah.
And then we have Anthony reading the paper, Gregory and Hyacinth playing underground, Eloise is relaxing on a chair, holding a book, Benedict is just relaxing, watching the family. Violet, she's asking who Daphne will be dancing with next at the night's ball. And Daphne was just mentioning Lord Weaver. Anthony's like, Lord Hardy was asking for you. But he's pretty boastful, says Daphne. Violet's like wondering about the Duke. And Gregory starts stealing something from Anthony's plate. That was so cute. And he's like playfully, like kind of trying to swat him with his newspaper.
He like flexed on him. It was super cute. Yeah.
But his little interactions with the younger ones are very
so
charming.
Adorable.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's how you can tell. He's just such a conflicted guy. Mm-hmm. But so good.
Just how he interacts with the youngins.
Can
say a
everything.
Lot, too. Yeah. Anthony comments that Daphne is a wise girl for keeping her options open, knowing that Simon is not going to marry, right?
And absolutely not.
Violet says, my dear, why ever do you complicate matters so? You must simply marry the man who feels like your dearest friend. And there's a lot of truth to that.
It is.
Right?
There is.
If not the truth.
Yeah.
You want to make sure you have a good rapport with somebody you're going to marry.
Right.
Especially for her, because she wants to marry for love.
Right.
And create this beautiful relationship like her parents have. If you read Violet and Bloom in Bridgerton Ever After, they knew each other, Violet and Edmund, when they were younger. Daphne just sarcastically says, that seems so simple.
And Violet's is that like, it? That's all? I got to find my best friend? You know, like...
it's like, yep, quite, pretty much, you know? And then we go into the Birdcage Ball, where there's a string quartet starting to play. Billie Eilish, Bad Guy. We see the members of the Ton already dancing, drinking, conversing. We see peacocks, fixtures on display, like mini walls of flowers and leaves, parrots in cages. You even see like feathers in the hair and of the debutantes, and that signals, that signals like I'm looking, I'm available. Come to me, come hither, And this ball was a metaphor for also a woman's place in society, like the birds being kept in cages. They had a certain role and you can't really fly off.
Yeah.
You can fly from, you know, your family home, but you have to fly to another home.
Yeah.
And be just constricted. And that's, especially for Eloise, that's not
And
what
she
you
does
want.
Have a quote later. She's like, must we like squawk, right? And it's funny because if you have the captions on, right when you're heading into the ball, it says parrot squawks. Like, so it was like, it was already like, you know, she was already making the correlation. I was looking at it and they were saying it was like the bird ball. And I was like, yeah. And I also think I was like, also, I feel like everybody's going to eat crow when, for all the people that were talking shit about Bridgerton's going to suck and it's going to fail. And here we are, 82 million households. Plenty of nominations later. That's what that signifies. Everyone eating crow. And I like that they chose Bad Guy for the beginning of this, because this is the beginning of a string that will lead Simon into playing the bad guy, as well as someone who's about to enter the ball who is going to be the bad guy as well too. So I like that they chose that specific song for that ball.
Yeah, and you kind of also want to weed out the bad guys, right? And true. That's what true. Daphne is doing here.
Absolutely.
She's dancing suck. With.
They suck.
First up was Lord Weaver for a dance, and Daphne's trying to like talk to him.
He's like stunned into silence.
Yeah, it's either he can't dance and talk at the same time, or he's never had anybody ask him questions during dancing, or he's never thought about simple things like, do you want to live in the country or do you want to live in town?
Yeah. So, well, Daphne alluded that he was so stunned by her beauty that he couldn't talk in the next dance. But unfortunately, with Lord Hardy, he didn't shut up.
Yeah, that was another problem. He was just more, like she said in the drawing room, boastful. Yeah. So he was listing down all of his
properties.
Acquirements
yeah.
since he got out of university.
Yep.
And Daphne's like kind of wide-eyed, like, okay. And then it's nice comforts, but that's not Daphne, right? She, the kind of acquirements is, I want your heart.
Yeah.
That's the kind of acquirements she wants, not property and everything that he has. Then we have Lord Tompkins, who mentions that his mother is going to reside with them once he gets married.
Yeah.
According to his father. And wow, even an innocent debutante, I don't think, would want, you know, in-laws in the house when you just got married.
Okay, first of all, Daphne has only had experience with one in-law, and that was Lady Burbrook.
So, and they weren't in-laws yet.
And so
that was like, enough.
A potential mother-in-law, which was Lady Burbrook. So imagine that's the only experience that you had of someone's mother, and you imagining that you have to live with someone like that, that's telling you you're too skinny, you need kippers and rye, and she's like, what's wrong with you? Why are you so somber? Like, that's who you would have to live with. I would freak out too.
Gosh. But that dance ended, so.
Yeah, and you can see Simon looking on the side, hella amused, that she's miserable. She just looks so unhappy because she keeps glancing over at him, and he just gives her the eyebrow like, these men suck, huh?
And then you have her walking to Simon after the dances, and that's what Violet and Lady Danbury is talking about, right? Like,
look how at them.
They look like a love match.
They're so good.
And Violet's like, just make sure he, like, puts a ring on it.
Yeah. And a little before the dances, like, there were some mamas looking over at Simon, and he was like, fuck. So he's like, must I share you with every moon-eyed dandy, Miss Bridgerton? And then Daphne is just like, only the charming ones. And she said that to the guy that didn't speak, like, at all. Like, he was not charming. He's like the least charming of them all. And once again, just showed Daphne's easy way with talking to any guy. And that's something that they said over and over in the book, like, that she had no problem speaking to gentlemen, you know? So I love that they did that. And, you know, I don't think he had to pretend to be jealous. I think the only reason why he wasn't jealous was because he knew these guys were like, they sucked.
Yeah. I love that too, that he acted like a jealous guy. He sounded mad. And then the debutantes are like, don't.
Oh, no.
Okay.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, no. Don't ask him.
He's in love.
Yeah.
He's in love.
And then for him, it works. Because then that's what he wanted. Everybody's doing.
Yeah, he stood on the side by himself the whole time.
And then Queen Charlotte and Prince Friedrich walks in. And actually, the queen's hair, it's made out of two wigs, she said. An afro, inspired by Beyoncé's afro in Austin Powers Gold Member.
Gold Member, yep.
And then, of course, then you have the like curly, low ponytail. I loved it so much.
It was so good.
They walk in. We have the debutantes looking at them. And behind Daphne are the Featherington ladies. And Prue's like, the prince is from Prussia. And I dare say, I just caught his eye. I'm like, oh, from all the way over there?
She's such a riot.
And then they beeline to him. And then Philippa exclaims, I love Russia. Good soon. And it's so funny.
She's hilarious.
That two completely different areas. Like, at that time in the 19th century, it was actually a mixture of German Poland and like certain areas of Eastern and Central Europe. That's why later on they mention speaking in German, but it was actually a mixture of certain places. But now it's separate places. And then the queen and prince, they stop at Cressida. And she does her fan flirting while Simon and Daphne are commentating on the spectacle. Mm-hmm. And Cressida, bless her, she's trying to look innocent with that face that she has.
And her bird nest.
And then we have Daphne saying, now he will kiss her hand. And Simon says, forever charmed by her submission. And that's what the marriage mart was before, right?
Right.
The debutantes looking very, very demure and innocent so he can trap their ass. Mm-hmm. And then wants to get married.
Bait and switch, bitch.
And then Simon says, I do believe he just told Miss Copper that her dress is exquisite. And he's like, he's going to come here and tell you the same exact
thing. He's going to tell every girl at the ball the same thing.
And the queen is excited to introduce Prince Frederick, the seasoned diamond. And he says exactly what Simon said would happen. He says, so lovely to meet you, Miss Bridgerton. Your gown is exquisite.
Oh, my God.
And Daphne snorts. How relatable is that? It was
it was so good.
Funny. And then the prince's eyes widens. And like, he's trying to be like, I know, and at the same time, like, telling himself, don't embarrass this girl. And the queen is looking at her like, what was that? Simon's on the side, chuckling. Daphne apologizes. Prince is like, you don't need to. Queen's like, perhaps a small one. The prince is probably, like, very charmed. Not just by the way she looks, but that snort, too. That's what I like to think.
Yeah.
And the queen and the prince, they go off and meet others.
Yeah.
Daphne goes to Simon and he's already laughing and she's like, I blame you. And he's like, it's not my fault that unbecoming sound came out of your like person.
Yeah.
And Daphne, she freaking snorts again and they're just laughing at the fact that she's making it look so easy.
Yeah.
And just the easy talk and laughing between like each other. And then, of course, another suitor comes and asks Daphne for a dance. And while they're walking away, Daphne's looking back. Yeah. Simon's looking at her. Simon leaves the room.
Yeah.
Probably just seek out Lady Danbury or go to the card room. Whatever. Yeah. That's just what they did.
Right? That's what boys do.
Then we go to the Modiste, which was filmed in Pickled Greens Cafe in Bath.
Yes.
How cute is that?
Yes.
It's nighttime. The last customer just left. Genevieve just locks the door and then she hears this noise coming from the back room. She's scared, grabs scissors and then walks to the back. And then it's Sienna who walks into the back room and Genevieve loses her French accent.
Yeah, real quick. Real quick.
The actress that plays Genevieve, Catherine Drysdale, she said that to get ready for the role, she read the 20th century novelist Georgette Heyer's Regency World book so she could learn more about like the world. And she said that as a modiste, you are more successful if you are French,
right.
Thus the French accent, because the ton thought the best dressmakers were from France.
Mm-hmm.
And that's important in her situation as a woman and business owner because she's just doing what she needs to do to survive.
Right.
And that's what was great about the interaction between Genevieve and Sienna. The both of them are doing the same thing. They need to do what they need to do to survive. Genevieve with her business. Sienna is an opera singer, but she, you know, I don't think they make as much money. So she does need like this sensible gentleman to like help fit her out and like everything, clothing, a place to stay.
Right.
And then you can tell that these two are good friends because they're just joking about, like, Sienna not coming from the front. And she's like, you don't want, like, anyone to see you cavorting with an infamous opera singer. Genevieve's like, you are third on that list.
Yeah.
And then they start having drinks. Genevieve was so kind. She's telling Sienna that she can stay until she can find another gentleman protector. And Genevieve's like, not like the last one. Sienna gives her a look like, we are not talking about this.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then Sienna like quickly changes the subject and looks at the dress that Genevieve is working on, which is for Cressida Cowper. And Genevieve says, not that it will help her get an offer. Not even my finest silks will compensate for that sneer.
Yeah. I love that.
Just saw her being innocent too, right?
Right.
Previously. And And this statement does foreshadow what Lady Cowper does to Violet at the end of the episode. Mm-hmm. Genevieve offers to make Sienna a dress of the same fabric for her next performance. And Sienna's like, oh, that the color don't suit me. I'm not an innocent debutante. Genevieve says, and more is your good fortune. Because you wouldn't want to be one of those, like, debutantes. And whatever they do in the drawing room is like their needlework or whatever they have to do to pass their time. You and I make our own way in the world.
Yeah.
And Sienna agrees. And that kind of drives her to go get a gentleman protector. But it's good to hear that these two ladies got each other's backs.
Yeah. Like best friends do, you know? And yes. Like Sienna is essentially homeless. She has nothing. She was promised so much by, you know, a guy. And we've mentioned this before. Can you imagine? Like, we've all been there. Some fuck boy, fuck girl, whatever, has made a bunch of empty promises and they don't give a shit that they broke all of them. And then you're left trying to pick up the pieces of your life. And she's so lucky that she has this friend who is not judging her. And when she's feeling down in the dumps and she's like, I'm not one of those debutantes, you know, like, but she's saying it like sarcastically. Genevieve is like, why would you want to be one of those? Like, you know, we make our own way. We're good, you know? Like, we don't need to be anybody else but who we are. So
looking at the bright side of their situation. Yeah,
absolutely. And we all need that in a friend.
Yeah. And then Genevieve is asking Sienna, where would you find a paragon of dishonor?
Yeah.
Sienna smiles and she knows exactly where to go.
Yeah. And then men's club.
Yeah, gentlemen's club, the men gambling. You see already Lord Featherington, like, gambling.
So unlucky. So
onto Anthony, he laughs and Simon teases him that, like, he's capable of laughing again.
In front of him, yeah.
Yeah. And Anthony is, because Anthony has not been having fun because of all that's going on with Daphne.
Yeah.
But Anthony says, like, you can't fault me, because Anthony doubts his intentions with Daphne. Simon says he can't fault him because they know each other for a long time, and he should know that even though you saw all my mischievous, like going-ons, like, I would never make a fool of a lady, especially not his sister. Anthony says he is respectful, yet Simon is not intending to marry, and Simon says his plans hasn't changed. And let's leave it at that. His intentions are respectful.
Right.
Then courtesans walk in through the door, including Sienna at the rear. Men are rejoicing and happy. Anthony spots Sienna and excuses himself from Simon. Sienna walks to Simon and flirts with him and entices him to possibly meet him after her performance tomorrow night. Simon doesn't say anything, but he looks amused at her, like, straightforwardness. Her indirect straightforwardness, in a way.
Yeah, and the smiles that he gives her are so different from the smiles that he gives Daphne.
Rake, like, smiles.
Like, he's smirking. You don't see teeth, you know, like, it's just, like, you know, squinting of the eyes. But, like, with Daphne, it's, like, open mouth, smiles, grins, you know, like, he smiles with his eyes. But, like, with Sienna, it's just she gets hurt his smirks.
Yeah.
At best. And I love that. I love the contrast, because we just came from a scene where Daphne and Simon are writing this book about how to court men, and they're giggling, laughing, she's snorting, he's like chuckling, and, you know, so I love the contrast that they're showing, that this is a Simon that everyone sees, and that's the Simon that Daphne gets.
Yeah. Daphne gets the friendly guy.
The actual Simon.
Yeah.
The no pretenses, no faking, that Simon. Yeah.
From wherever Anthony went, he's looking at the both of them, Simon and Sienna, and
he's just wondering
what they're talking about, like, trying to keep his distance from Sienna, but he's still shocked, like what's going on, and he can tell, like, he still have, like, feelings and about what happened.
Yeah.
And then we go into the Bridgerton house. It is nighttime. Daphne is rolling around her bed, restless. She can't sleep. And she walks to the kitchen, and Anthony sees her walking by. This actually happens in the book also.
Yeah.
In the first book.
I love that.
Daphne does invite Anthony for some more milk. And then the scene goes into the kitchen where they're just staring at the stove. And both of them don't know what to do. So they agree on cold milk.
Yeah, and that just kind of shows, like,
the privilege.
Their privilege, too, yes. You know? So I like that they did that.
It's nice. They're privileged, but they're nice enough not to, like what they said earlier, not bother the servants and get them up just so they could have warm milk.
Yeah.
And then Daphne asks Anthony if he knows why Simon doesn't want to marry.
Yeah.
Daphne asks that she's just wondering, and Anthony says it's things she should not hear about. But Anthony tells her that Simon grew up differently than their family. He grew up pretty much alone, not like their family where it was 8 siblings and there were still more people.
Yeah.
Anthony said Simon never mentioned his family in 20 years of knowing him. He spent his time alone and prefers it that way.
Yeah.
Daphne is saddened, not as somebody, I guess, who's interested in him, not just that, but because just saddened from his background.
Yeah, anybody would be sad about that. Like, and Anthony, you know, tells her he never knew his mom and hardly knew his dad.
Yeah. And Anthony says, like, she shouldn't concern herself with his troubles. You must simply know some people are not meant to be together, no matter what, how much we might wish otherwise. He's talking about the Duke and Daphne, but also himself. Like, he couldn't even look at her. He had to look to the side when he said that.
Yeah.
He kind of recovers himself and he goes back to drinking his cold milk, putting a smile on his face.
Yeah.
And Daphne thanks him for his company and goes back to bed.
Yeah. Yeah, and he was definitely, I think he wasn't even talking about the Duke and her. He was just talking about himself.
I think he wanted to make sure that Daphne thinks that he was talking about them.
Yes.
Especially her bringing up, like, because he's probably thinking, oh, she might want to marry this guy. But of course, we all know, like, it was really more him.
Yeah, for sure.
And it's good. That's why I like how he looked to the side, because he didn't want her to see. Mm-hmm. She might see that there's something more in his face.
Yeah.
And then we get Lady Whistledown talking while Daphne is on the pianoforte. And then Lady Whistledown talks about a new wing at Somerset House to be open today. And we have Marina being fitted at the Featherington House. And Genevieve wonders if she took the measurements wrong because Genevieve can't lace her up tighter. Lady Featherington's like, Miss Thompson has a fondness of cake and mentions a reducing diet. Marina is just there being quiet, and Genevieve just says, oui, madame. But she's looking up. Yeah, she's looking up and down, and she's looking at her belly too while she's tightening up the corset.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go into Somerset House. The exterior was filmed at the Queen's House Museum in Greenwich. And the interior of the new wing is picture gallery room in Summerlee House in Ringwood in Hampshire. People arriving by carriage outside Somerset House, the Featherington ladies, all of them are holding hands. They're making this chain, except for Penelope.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how it always is, right? Yeah. Like Penelope, like she's forced to go to be a debutante, but they're not really paying attention to her.
Yeah.
And then Lady Whistledown says, of course, there's today's royal attraction as well. And, of course, it is the prince. We have the debutantes, including the Featheringtons, surrounding the prince. And Cressida beelines it and even purposely steps on some other girl's shoes.
Yeah.
Like, savage.
She's so good. I love her. She's so good.
And then Lady Whistledown mentions a language tutor that has been visiting Cowper House all week. So she wants to impress, of course. Prue puffs out her chest. And then the scene goes into Hyacinth and Gregory and the other Bridgertons walking into the main gallery.
I could hear Prue, like, pumping herself up while she, like, is like, you got this, bitch, let's go, you know?
Violet is on Anthony's arm and starts mentioning debutantes and their accomplishments. Anthony's face shows, like, he's just entertaining her and just going along with it, but...
After he's the like, third one, I don't want to.
Yeah. He's like, if I wanted to know about, like, debutantes and their dubious accomplishments, I could have just stayed home and read Lady Whistledown.
Yeah.
And he walks away from Violet, tries to grab Benedict as an escort, but he's like, no.
Not today, mama.
And then grabs Colin's arm as an escort. And he lets her, I mean, one, he's the last one standing, he's charming Colin.
He's so adorable. He's like, okay, mom, let's go.
And then we have Anthony walking past Penelope's, who are looking at a painting of a butt and other naked people. Mm-hmm. Eloise says it's dull. Penelope says it's familiar, but it's the first time she's seen it. And Eloise says, of course, it's like the other paintings. It's done by a man who sees a woman as a decorative object. And they just kind of laugh about that whole thing where that's it. That's all we're seen as, women, just there in the house looking pretty.
Yeah.
Human vase. Penelope turns and sees Marina calling for help silently. Lady Featherington introduces Marina to Lord Middlethorpe. Lord Middlethorpe, in the books, is actually connected to Simon's father. And mm-hmm. he had another purpose. But they kind of changed the route.
Yep.
And it's nice to know that they're still using the name, though.
Yeah.
Lady Featherington is trying to introduce Marina. He says, Miss Thompson, the pleasure is mine. Marina says, entirely. And Marina doesn't want to be there or meet any man. Penelope interrupts, and Lady Featherington is trying to tell Penelope to go look at other paintings. And Marina's like, it is the perfect time for Pen to ask my question and whatever she has in mind. And she tells Middlethorpe, who's trying to talk to her, like, I'm not addressing you. And Middlethorpe says, I do not believe that I have ever met such a lovely girl with such ugly countenance.
Yeah.
And then leaves the group. And then Lady Featherington, of course, trying to marry her off. She's frustrated at Penn. She's frustrated at Marina.
Yeah.
And she's saying that Marina's not understanding the gravity of her situation and just, like, stomps away.
Yeah. Which is some foreshadowing of what happens later.
Yes. Then the screen pans from painting of a woman to Benedict staring at it. Lady Danbury walks next to him with a man, and Benedict's like, it seems cold. There's no sense of spirit of the subject, the light. And he's wondering why it's not skied. Lady Danbury, lovely Lady Danbury, suggests he should tell the artist. Benedict agrees, and then Lady Danbury turns to the other guy, who's the artist, and asks him why his painting is not skied. And Granville is kind of like, amused, but at the same time,
so good,
just like wow. But I think he kind of agreed to,
yeah.
Because then later on, like with their conversation in another episode, he has this feeling that oh, maybe this guy knows his thing,
yeah.
So, and Benedict is trying to apologize, but Granville just excuses himself to find his wife, Lady Danbury. She's chuckling, and Benedict calls her diabolical and wonders why he just let him go. And just, she's like, it's funny, it was funny. And yeah. she leaves Benedict, who just is feeling very, she's embarrassed,
like, hella laughing.
She is a troublemaker,
she
though
is. She is
as loving and meddling as she can be. She is a troublemaker.
Oh my god. But do you think because she is meddling, she knows that like Benedict might like art, and this is the best way to like get them to know each other?
Can be. She's very intuitive.
Yeah.
And an observant, like,
extremely.
Gosh, she knows things.
Yeah.
And then we have the prince talking to the Cowpers, but he leaves them once he sees Daphne walks by. He walks after her, and he compliments her that the art is not the only lovely thing present.
Yeah.
And Daphne easily talks to him, but is distracted when she sees Simon walk by.
So, I have some information about the prince. Would you like to hear it?
Yes.
Okay, so for some of you, you've already seen it everywhere that he was also in Harry Potter. Yeah. I think it's like the rite of passage is you have to go through Harry Potter. I mean, even Simon was in Harry
Potter. That was Hermione's, like, yeah. Or he wanted Hermione.
Yes. Yeah, he was such a creep in there. But I actually remember him from another Cinderella story, Once Upon a Song, with Lucy Hale. I just remember the stepmom that's in there. She's like, oh, I wish he would be my mother. You know, like,
wow.
She's just the worst. And then also, some of you guys might remember him from Pitch Perfect. He was the radio DJ guy. So he looked a lot more older and mature. Do you remember him?
Yeah. The only British guy there.
Yeah, super hot. So I think that they chose specifically this prince Basically, this prince is at some point was kind of courting Princess Charlotte, which is King George and Queen Charlotte's oldest daughter. Mm-hmm. And out of nowhere, he got engaged to someone else. And so kind of like this story, right? Like we find out in the next episode, Daphne and the prince are courting, and then all of a sudden, she gets engaged to someone else.
Oh.
The parallels of that is pretty crazy. And right here, he mentions travel and how she would really like Italy. And she's like, I don't like anything that doesn't have to do with Simon. So get out of here. So that's what he did. He traveled a lot with the military, with the troops and everything like that. And another very interesting fact, he had two sons. One lived in their till their 60s and the other one lived till their 70s. And guess what they have in common with the Duke's vow?
The Duke's vow?
His vow to his father.
That he'll never have heirs?
Or get married.
Oh, really?
Both of his sons never got married and never sired heirs.
Why, was he an ass?
I don't know. That was just part of the history. That he had two sons and they lived to a very elderly age of 60s and 70s. And none of them, both of them did not get married and both of them did not have even an illegitimate child. Just no children at all.
Crazy.
Yeah.
So I'm going to research that. I need to know. Yeah. Why. I want to know who took over then.
Yeah. So he was just a prince.
There's no Prussia anymore.
Yeah. So. There's that. Well, maybe that's why. I don't know. Who knows, right? So, isn't that crazy? That just the parallels of those. And then, which...
That's some good digging.
Mm-hmm. I went way too far. So this tidbit is me going a little further. So his mother eventually... in her third marriage. So Prince Friedrich is her first son to her first marriage. That husband died 3 years later and they had a really bad relationship. Yes. Her second husband, while they were together, she met her third husband, which is actually one of Queen Charlotte and King George's sons. And they, yeah, weird. So they fell in love and they asked to get permission to get divorced and everyone granted them that they can get divorced. But all of a sudden that husband died of mysterious circumstances.
Uh-huh.
So they think that he was poisoned. Funny, it doesn't someone potentially get poisoned later this season as well too? But she basically, when Queen Victoria became queen, because of some law, she could no longer be, she lost Hanover, like, because she couldn't, it had to be a male issue that took over that thing. So Prince Friedrich's mom married Queen Charlotte and King George's son, and then ends up being a queen.
Oh, wow.
Queen of Hanover, because Queen Victoria inherited the title.
Yeah.
And she couldn't have that land because only a male can have it. So her husband at the time took over that land and she became queen.
Oh, wow. Jeez.
It's super complicated, but I went down this really super deep, dark hole. But I just thought it was very interesting, the parallel of the stories, that they chose this specific prince who was courting Queen Charlotte's daughter. And, like, it was rumored that they were all, and everyone thought they were going to get engaged. And he suddenly got engaged with someone else.
Huh. So he's the one who broke it off?
He broke it off. Everyone thought they were going to get engaged. And then he suddenly got engaged to someone else.
Oh.
But doesn't that story remind you of someone?
Of course.
Something that happens within the next couple episodes.
It's great how they use real life things, right?
I know. Show. Isn't that crazy? Like when I was looking at it, I was like, oh, what great parallels is that? And that both of his sons didn't get married or have kids.
That's just coincidence too. Great.
Yes.
Great coincidence. Yes.
Coincidence, purpose, who knows?
Yeah. We can ask Julia Quinn.
I know. But a lot of people were kind of like, they didn't understand the whole prince plot. They didn't like that he was added. They didn't like this whole thing. But
I think Megan Lane from Plot Twist had a very interesting perspective. They were, you know, we mentioned this before that, you know, she didn't really have any good options, you know, yes. Like it was only Simon. And before that it was like decaying Dukes, you know? So like, it was really great that she literally had this man who had everything that she's supposed to want, right? He's over here talking about having a family already. He's already talking about like where they're going to settle down, where he wants to settle down, you know? When she was dancing with Lord Weaver, she's like, so do you prefer the country or the city? And he's like, I never thought about it, you know? So like this, everything that she wants, this man is like feeding it to her in spoonfuls. Like, I don't mind London. Like, I wouldn't mind raising my kids here. Like, just everything that she ever wanted, and she still chose the Duke. So I think that made it more like she just really loved Simon, to where some people in the books were saying like she didn't really have any other options, you know?
Yeah, and so. I there is that underlining theme in like the series about choices too, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So. That's great.
Isn't that crazy?
I do love what Meg and Lane said. That's a great theory. I love it.
Yeah.
Going back, once Daphne sees Simon walk by, she tells the prince that he should make his rounds with the other ladies, curtsies, and walks away.
Yeah, and like, he's like so fascinated with her. He's just like, hey, like, because Lady Whistledown just told us that he's been at the Cowper's house every fucking day. And then he sees Daphne, he's like, bye, girl. You know, like, he's like, I see my boo, you know, and then like goes over and talks to Daphne, pays her a compliment and tries to like, you know, be like, hey, like, I think you would really like Italy. And then she's like, she sees Simon's and she's like, bye, boo.
And then she's at the door. She's like fixing her hair before she goes up to Simon.
Cute. Yeah, I love it.
And he's like looking at the painting and they're talking about how great they are at fooling Lady Whistledown. She turns and they start staring at the same painting. And Daphne's like, I noticed that this painting is different than the others you donated. And he's telling him more of himself and what he knows. Like, yeah. He said that Lady Danbury thinks it was a part of his mother's painting like collection.
Yeah.
And she's staring at it. And she starts talking about what the painting makes her feel, and just Simon's just hooked on what the hell she's saying.
Yeah, and you can see here that he's already trying to get rid of his father. These are all of his father's painting donated to Somerset House, and he's trying to exorcise the house of his father. And the only painting that was there that was his mom's was kind of front and center, yeah. And Daphne just,
I guess because just, it might have been, like he said, the different.
Yeah.
It was a different one. So give it like a spotlight.
It was such a contrast. Yeah. And then, like, and she pegs it and he just feels like both of their vulnerabilities are right there for you to see.
And then she just talks about intimacy and how the painting looks intimate.
Yeah.
And then their hands do a little something and starts creeping towards each other. The knuckle graze. And then light hand holding, and you even see like Daphne gasp, like
she's like the air was sucked out of the room. That's like how I felt, like
current,
yeah. And the piano like just like made the moment just more. Oh my god, insane sexual tension. And I don't care. I've watched this episode so many times, and every time at that part, I just squeal. Like I cannot help it. You know, like basically we've already.
It's the close-ups.
Yeah,
I think of their faces,
and their emotions, and
the slow motion.
Yeah, I mean, this is the part in the books where we're just like, finally, you know, like, oh my gosh. And but yeah, like we've basically been falling in love with this couple, watching this couple fall in love with each other for 2.5 hours, almost 3 hours at this point, right? And they finally fucking graze knuckles, and you're just like, yeah.
When it's supposed to be a ruse, right?
Yeah. But that's why we love fake relationship tropes. We're here for it.
And then somebody ruins the moment.
You just hear a bunch of like, wah.
Yeah, they hear the crowd gasp and then they look at each other like, what the hell happened? Oh, what did happen over there too? and they start walking to the main room. Philippa and Prudence explains that Cressida swooned and the prince caught her. And the prince is fanning Cressida and she's just acting. Like, look at Eloise's face. Like,
she's like, so like, OA.
It's obviously faking. Penelope's just laughing.
Eloise is like you've gotta be kidding me right now.
She's even like pointing her hand at Cressida. Like, she's like looking around, like, does anyone not notice
how stupid this is? And then you got Philippa and Prudence, right? It's the most romantic thing I've ever seen.
And then you have Simon and Daphne, like, joking about the fake swoon and laughing. And then the prince hears and looks up. And then Cressel is pissed because he's looking at Daphne.
And he's so amused. He's so drawn to her.
And she's talking to somebody else. Cressida goes back to being kind of nice and
just swinging.
Looks at her.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the crowd applauses Cressida for her performance.
Oh,
the art of the swoon.
Yeah.
Yes.
Seriously.
And then still, Daphne and Diamond. Daphne.
Daphne. Wow. And Simon. Those are both their ship names right there.
Daphne. So, Daphne was trying to hold on to their laughter. Don't care. Who's watching?
No.
Entertaining themselves with each other.
Yeah, talking about chapter 6. We need to step up our game. You know, art of the swoon. Love it.
Simon leaves Somerset House and his footman asks him if they should go to the opera. But Simon's like, nope, let's go straight home. And he's looking back at Somerset House where he had a really nice moment with Daphne.
Yeah.
And you know, it kind of reminds me of what he said earlier at the Gentleman's Club to Anthony about him having respectful intentions. Like, it'd be very disrespectful when you have, like, this nice moment.
This supercharged, electrifying moment, and you're like, let's go meet an opera singer.
So, good on him. I really like that.
And then we see the opera house, and we're in Sienna's dressing room, and she's looking at the mirror, looking absolutely sad, and she's just waiting for Simon.
Yeah.
And she's probably also preparing herself for her next performance, which is with Simon.
Yes.
But the opera employee said he's ready to lock up, and she's like wondering, like, isn't there a gentleman outside waiting for me? And it's like,
No.
And she's back to square one. Next, we have Lady Whistledown speaking, and while she's speaking, the frame goes from Daphne pressing keys on a pianoforte, Eloise trying to read near Daphne, the prince and Cressida promenading, Lady Cowper looking very happy.
So pleased with herself.
There's probably so much more on that article that she's happy about. And then the royal footman is bringing a dish to the queen and the prince, and they're having probably, lunch?
Yeah.
Because there's a main course in the middle of the table.
And they're having a fucking midday snack.
Which tea is this? Yeah. Afternoon, late afternoon? And while that's happening, Lady Whistledown is saying, of course, not everyone has fallen victim to the royal fever sweeping through London town.
Yeah.
One diamond in particular seems quite immune, making this author wonder if the crown has lost its luster. And the queen stops reading and she's like, I know what this insolent woman insinuates, and I shall certainly not make allowances for it. And the prince, he's like, does she mean the king?
Like, where do you guys keep him?
He's like misunderstanding, like, what's happening, or like the queen was reading some other part of the article. But that was pretty funny. I'm like, is he supposed to be ditzy? That was my thought. Like, what was going on? But I don't know. Moving on, that was actually really funny to me. I laugh every time I watch it because I probably don't understand what's happening too. And then the queen explains while the prince is eating that Daphne is the incomparable of the season. So she is his most suitable match on English shores. And then the prince says, Daphne is a lovely lady, but Lady Whistledown seems to think her heart is already spoken for. And I think that's very, like, mature and, like, very gentlemanly of him, right?
For sure.
Again, choices. He's not making a choice just because he outranks the Duke.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And very much just about heart. And that's what Daphne wants, somebody to love.
That's what I'm saying. Like, he's, like, the perfect... What if she could draw up a man from her list of things that she would want in a guy, he literally appeared, you know?
Yeah. But he's missing that certain something, right?
He's missing Simon. Oh, sorry.
And the queen says, her heart is no matter as long as her hand remains free. You are a prince. Charm her. And she stabs her food because she's so mad.
So irritated.
And it's pretty much a command. And then we're at Bridgerton House. There's slow, repetitive piano notes being played. And then we see Benedict in another room by himself. And he sighs, maybe because the piano keys are irritating him.
You know, he looks up and he's like, oh, shit. How am I supposed to focus?
He goes back to sketching hands. He is not happy. It rips off, throws the sheet into the trash.
Yeah.
And then it seems like he's been doing it for a while because there was a lot of like crumpled papers on the ground too.
Mm-hmm.
And then for this, Benedict did take drawing lessons for the role.
Yeah, I love that. And that he gifted everyone a portrait at the end.
Know.
That's so amazing. It's so cool.
We need a commission from him.
Oh my God.
And also, according to book 3 in the book, like, he does sketch, but only a non-family member found out about that. And then she was the one that one day told his relatives that he sketches.
Yeah, and he specializes in portraits.
Yeah.
That's so amazing.
And then Daphne continues to play the piano keys. Eloise is reading and begs her to stop. Like, she's, like, irritated.
Yeah.
Because it's just keys. There's nothing happening at this point.
Yeah, she's like, can you not?
And then Daphne is, like, telling her, you should join me because you need to practice and work on this accomplishment and be proficient before you come out.
Yeah.
And Eloise, she sarcastically said to just continue pressing your keys so you can scare off the Duke, the Prince, and anybody else.
Yeah.
And Daphne asks if that's what Eloise wishes, and Eloise is like, yeah, of course, I want you to not marry, so the longer you're out, then Mama wouldn't even pay attention to me.
Yep.
And then Daphne says, you can go read outside. And they just argue. Eloise thinks Daphne insinuates reading is not a way to gain a husband, essentially.
Right.
Daphne sighs, and then Eloise says, you wish to follow your heart. And I wish to nurture my mind. Let us leave it at that. Then she goes back to reading, or she tries to. And Daphne argues that Eloise should look at her perspective, meaning Daphne wants to find love and marry, plus make sure that her husband of choice will not ruin her sister's prospects.
Yeah.
Plus probably she's thinking about, you know, other things like growing feelings about Simon.
Yeah.
She's frustrated.
Yeah.
She doesn't have time for an argument. She sees Eloise just reading, ignoring her, and goes back to her piano. But Eloise, she clearly knows that Daphne sounds upset, and she tries to diffuse the situation by taking interest in the song that Daphne is composing.
Yeah.
And then they have this back and forth about, like, do you have a name for the song? You should name it. And Daphne is like, no, I don't have one. And just, if you're going to continue to play that, just give it a name.
Yeah.
Give it a name.
Yeah. And at this point, like, Daphne doesn't even know that she's sexually frustrated because she doesn't know that that's a thing. But she's tossing and turning. She's having dreams of the Duke. You know, she's watching him lick spoons. So at this point, she's... And it's reflecting in her music, right?
Yes.
And so, yeah, I really like that.
Yeah. But also, this scene shows that you have these two very different sisters. Again.
Very.
Right? They had another scene in an earlier episode. They still stick together as different as they are. Bickering and everything. They don't even have a direct apology going on. But
no.
Still. They know when they hear each other and they'll repair it. And then next, we see the slums, where it's not like the squares of the ton, where it's very colorful. This is dull and gray and just different. You see people washing clothes outside, hanging clothes, like Lady Sweeping. And then a carriage rolls up with Lady Featherington and Marina, who get out. And Lady Featherington tells her that she may end up there if she refuses to marry and has her child out of wedlock. Life can be hard. And Marina argues that seeing people will not change her mind at all.
Yeah.
So Lady Featherington says to look at the child behind you on the ground who's shaking his hat, waiting for alms, you know, yeah. has nothing.
Yeah. So at that point, as you mentioned, is one child. But Lady Featherington says, what of the children? And so I think that's kind of an ode to
her. Yes.
To Marina and how many children she will end up having. Mm-hmm. So I like that they did that because she says, but what of the children? And there's only one child. So yeah.
Marina answers and says she will not go silent. She will not stand by and let the plans happen. And she says that she has a man who loves her. And Lady Featherington asks, like, where is he then? Like, does he know about your condition? Has he written back to you? When Marina told her that she's been writing beautiful love letters to him mm-hmm. and he knows of her condition. And Lady Featherington is just looking smug. And then I'm thinking, I wonder if she already intercepted a letter from Sir George, right? And she was just bringing Marina to the slums kind of to get her to change her mind before she goes in with the kill, with the letter.
Has he responded to you, you know?
Lady Featherington basically tells her that men will say anything just to get into your pants. Yeah. And it's rare that it's true love after a man finds out that a woman is with child. And Marina just doesn't want to hear it. She walks away, not having it, knowing Sir George loves her. And this is actually the scene that Ruby Barker posted on her as her audition video.
Yeah.
And I mean, she was talking to a male in the video, but it was actually supposed to be talking to Lady Featherington.
Right, right.
Which I found interesting, like why she would choose that. But there was a lot going on in this little
I don't think they choose it. They are given a set of lines that they need to read for on the video. And if you guys watch that video, you guys would notice that towards the end of it, a scene that some lines that were cut out was like, and what do you know of love? Like, you know, like you don't see the way that, like, I see the way your husband looks at me or Lord Featherington looks at me. And I was like, oh, I freaking knew it. I was like,
oh, I didn't even hear it all the way.
So she's like, oh, like what of the way that your Lord Featherington looks at me. Yeah. So I was like, I knew it. He was such a creep. And I remember when we posted on our stories, like a bunch of people responded, they're like, oh god, I wish they kept that in because like he was just so creepy. And I was like, I think it's creepier that it was unmentioned, you know, like,
yeah,
so
that you just see it,
and you just know and your skin crawls. But at that point she confronts Lady Featherington about the way Lord Featherington looks at her. Yeah, very interesting
why they cut it out.
I think, like I said, that, you know, like you want to know that the viewers are smart enough to see that this guy is just a fucking creep, you know, that he was literally in this house with like those courtesans that came in. He was cavorting with them as well too, you know, like so you just know that this guy is just bad news. So it doesn't even need to be said, you know. So I think that's
with the courtesans, I understand, but for somebody who's under your household.
Yeah.
That's yikes.
Yeah, but we'll get to that a little bit more in the future, but you mentioned it before. Is she really a distant cousin?
And then the next scene is the promenade, where we see the lake, the bridge at the far end, and then Cressida having tea with the prince under a tent.
Yeah.
Lady Danbury and Violet walking by, noting Cressida has found her a match. Unlikely pair, Lady Danbury says. And that's a foreshadowing already.
Yep.
Violet said, good for her. Maybe we'll keep her horrid mother off her back. Then Lady Cowper and Violet make eyes at each other and smile at each other while they're walking by. And I thought, like, what a word to use, horrid.
Yeah.
I am like, are we seeing the sweet sounding Lady Cowper in this story? Yeah. And she's just horrible to Cressida. I mean, and that makes sense. That's where Cressida gets it.
Yeah.
And are we going to see more of that in the next season?
Yep.
So I'm excited to see that. Cressida notices that the prince is smiling and looking at Daphne while they're walking behind Violet and Lady Danbury.
Daphne could give no fucks. She's she doesn't even give shit.
Simon is there. Tunnel vision.
Yeah. And Simon don't give no shits either.
Lady Danbury says, or perhaps not, because she notices that the prince is looking someplace else.
And that the everyone is noticing that the prince is watching.
Daphne and Simon's conversation is about like school days and Anthony, and Daphne is like shocked, like he would do something very immature, bring animals into the dormitory. And Simon's like, yeah, who do you think helped him bring it out? And thick as thieves when they were younger, right? Help each other out since then, knew each other since then. And then Daphne mentions that Violet told her that one should marry one's dearest friend. Simon said, you suggest I marry your brother?
He's so cheeky.
And then jokes aside, like, Daphne asks if he agrees with the statement, and Simon's telling her, you know, friendship is a good start, but most marriages are more like battlefields. And Daphne says there must be other things that hold a troop together, even in battlefield. And they stop at the bridge. Simon sees a group of possible suitors, pulls a white rose, just to make sure they see him doing it and giving it to her. And then Daphne says there must be other things that brings a couple together. And Simon agrees, and it can be both physical and intangible. And Daphne is like wondering, like, what? Like, how can something be both physical, be seen, and intangible, unseen? And Simon gets quiet and he just starts laughing because, like, he can't understand how little, you know, daughters are told before marriage. Like, he is thinking about salacious, the best word, things. And like, he's just having fun because Daphne is like
so confused.
Where is this going? I have no idea.
What are you talking about?
You need to tell me something now. And you know, Daphne's like, they don't tell us anything. Of course, Daphne wants to know. And then Simon says he will not tell her because it's not his place. But Daphne argues that he's not a real suitor. So as a friend, he can tell her. She wonders what she should be searching for if no one is going to tell her. Like, how will she know? Like, and Simon just says, you'll know when you know. And Daphne just keeps goading him into telling her because they're friends. Simon explains, finally, what happens between a husband and a wife. And it is a continuation of what happens when she is touching herself at night.
Yeah.
And Daphne looks like uncomfortable, scared, intrigued, just like everything. And Simon sees it in Daphne's eyes that she hasn't touched herself and reached a pinnacle. So he makes a suggestion.
The white rose that he gave her is also to us a little shout out, call out to the first edition of The Duke and I. In the back cover has some white roses and ivy, as we discussed before. And I looked up the symbolism of white roses, and it is purity, innocence, and youthfulness. Purity, innocence, and youthfulness, young love and eternal loyalty, new beginnings and everlasting love.
Aww, what she wants.
It's exactly what she wants, and he gave it to her. That's the symbolism behind it, right? Like, I know this is what you're looking for, but without being able to say so, and he, you know, talking isn't his forte, he basically gave her exactly what it is she wants.
You know, oh, and also you have to pay attention because that white rose pops up in different episodes too.
And you know, like, Book Diva 401 says, right? Like, got to take care of that flower, you know? So.
Oh, she will.
Yes, absolutely.
And then the next scene is Lady Danbury in the carriage. Lady Danbury hits Simon on the thigh with her cane, and we finally see her hitting somebody with her cane. I mean, in the books, it's kind of accidentally. If you're in the cane's way, it's going to hit you.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's your fault. It's not Lady Danbury's fault. Like, if your foot is in the way, it will get hit. If your ear is in the way, it's going to get hit.
Yeah.
So I just laugh every time I see that. I'm like, oh, finally. It took 2.5 episodes, but she hit somebody.
Yeah.
And then Lady Danbury demands to know what his intentions are with Daphne. I mean, if he's spending time, it must lead somewhere. Simon says, can it just be time well spent? And Lady Danbury explains that the situation is big, like darling Daphne has caught the attention of the prince. And if Simon wishes to marry her, then he needs to propose. Like, if he's not intending to do that, then he needs to give Daphne the chance to be with the prince. And Lady Danbury says, right. If he's dallying and charming her, then Daphne would be a fool. And Lady Danbury wouldn't forgive Simon's carelessness. Simon defends Daphne like, Miss Bridgerton is not a fool. And Lady Danbury says Simon is being cruel and she taught him better than that. And Simon's just pondering, no teasing in his eyes, trying to figure out what he's going to do next.
Yeah.
Because he already knows what he wants.
He doesn't want. He for sure wants her.
Yeah.
But he knows also what he made a vow for and what it is that he cannot or does not want. Unfortunately.
We are back at Bridgerton House. It is nighttime, outdoors. Eloise, again, smoking and tries to hide her cigarette when she hears something, but it was just Benedict. And he sits on the other swing and they share a cigarette again. And yeah. Eloise mentions she saw his sketches near the fireplace. And he says, are you spying on me now? She says, you actually have to be interesting for me to bother spying on you.
Yeah.
I love it. The two of them are amazing together.
Yeah.
I love their scenes together.
Yeah.
And then they're talking about the sketches are not drawings, and Benedict thinks they're horrible. Eloise says she writes in her journal, but it's not the same as writing a novel, and basically tells Benedict to do what you need to do.
Whatever he wants to do.
Yeah. If you have to hire a drawing master to get you to where you, to a certain point where you're not mad at your sketches, do it. If you need to hire a young lady to pretend to be impressed, then do it.
Yeah.
That was really funny.
It's hilarious.
So Eloise basically explains Benedict is a man in a man's world and he can do what he wants. He says even Lady Whistledown is clearly talented, but even she has to hide under a false name because she's a woman.
Yeah.
Benedict says she needs the pen name because society will, you know, not be kind if they find out who she is and because of what she writes. And Eloise points that's not the point. The point is that even a woman who has nothing and can have nothing still writes. She still does what she wants to do. You're a man, therefore you have everything. You are able to do whatever you want, so do it. Be bold. And Meg from Plot Twist brought this up, right? That it is lines from book 4, Penelope telling this to Colin. In book 4, chapter 6, after Colin hurts himself, I'm going to leave it at that. Penelope tells him, if you want a new direction for your life, then for heaven's sake, just pick something out and do it. The world is your oyster, Colin. You're young, wealthy, and you're a man. You can do anything you want.
Yeah.
So just putting it out there that Penelope told Colin this.
Yeah.
And then we're having Eloise telling Benedict to do it.
Yeah.
And then Eloise says if Benedict goes for what he wants, then Eloise can live vicariously through him.
Yeah.
Benedict asks if Eloise is Lady Whistledown because she's always writing, scribbling, knows people's business, opinionated. And, you know, in book 4, Colin asks that to Eloise, too.
Yep.
The difference is in book 4, Colin's like, you better stop writing if that's you.
He was not proud happy. About it.
Yeah.
No.
In this, Benedict was like, I admire you if you are Lady Whistledown.
Yeah.
Eloise was like being coy and said, I wouldn't even tell you if I were.
Exactly.
And she walks back to the house. And next is Daphne's bedroom. She locks the door, looks at the bed, touches her white rose.
Hell
an
yeah.
actual white rose.
Yeah. Both are white roses.
And then
both are white flowers.
And oh man, she was just imagining Simon during that whole time.
Yep.
Imagining him with the white rose, their interaction at Somerset House, dancing with him, until she reaches her pinnacle. And
Lady Bridgerton's like, you finished.
And I like how you know, the music and her.
Yeah.
Coincides because then it starts off kind of slow and then the music finishes.
Yeah.
It goes high and then finishes.
Yep.
Eloise is like, did you finally give it a name? And Daphne was just there, like, looking as happy as can be.
Shit eating grin.
Yeah.
So happy.
I think a part of it, too, is like her not knowing certain things, debutantes not knowing certain things. If you just give them some information, it will like ease their minds at a time where they have so much to think about.
It's not debutantes. It's all humans. Sometimes when we want to know something, the one thing that people will not explain to us or the one thing that we don't know about, we have this insatiable need to want to find out. So we'll Google it, we'll ask a friend, we'll ask a friend's friend, like, hey, can you ask Joe Bob that you knew from high school if he can help answer this question? You know, like when there's something that we don't know and we're innately curious about, it just gets more and more and more curious the longer it is that you don't know. And so she spent a very long time at this point not knowing anything about her body, about reproduction, about sexual tension, any of that, you know? And at this point, not even a kiss.
It's just sad.
Even in her dream, she didn't even get a kiss. She got an almost kiss, and she woke up. That's hella rude.
That's true. I mean, like, in this scene, like, just give them something, tell them something, and then she stops kind of overthinking, and she can finish composing something, you know? She can accomplish something. It's just ease of mind, right? And then we're in front of Gunther's tea shop, where Daphne and Rose is walking to Simon. Simon is standing seriously while Daphne talks about the day's activities. Like, this is what we're going to do. We're going to do this and that.
It's something different.
And then Simon heeds Lady Danbury's words and explains that he's not going to join her any longer. Essentially, he's breaking up their ruse and them, and she already has a lot of suitors following her, talking to her, visiting her, whatever, and the plan worked. So and she even caught the prince's attention, so he can basically go do whatever he needs to do. Daphne thinks he's acting out because of like the masturbation conversation, and he apologizes for that and explains Anthony's right and he's always going to be a rake and he will not corrupt her any further. Daphne says she's capable of deciding the balance of her own propriety, and she asks, I thought like we were friends. That's the reason why he even told her about touching herself, because they were friends,
right?
And then here he's like, oh, we were never friends.
Yeah.
You're still out of your leading strings, like a convenience, a pretty diversion. He's done basically with her.
Yeah. So that part when he was like, you're a convenience, he did not look her in the eye.
Yeah.
And then he was like,
he barely did the whole
and
time.
Then, but the only time he looked her dead in her eye was when he says, a pretty one.
Mm.
And then he continues to look away. So really great acting. Amazing. So, so good.
He's just basically saying anything that will make her believe that he doesn't care, which he does, but he knows he needs to give her, like Lady Danbury said, the chance to marry a prince. And the prince wants her. Of course, Daphne is heartbroken. Simon walks away. And then we see him storming into his house, demanding everything to get ready. They are leaving as soon as they can.
Immediately.
Daphne runs upstairs in Bridgerton's house, holding back her tears, and starts crying when she gets into her room. Like, you can see that the ruse did work, but it didn't really work on them, because you see the both of them heartbroken.
Yeah,
they weren't supposed to.
It worked. The matchmaking mama stayed away. She got choke proposals. She got plenty of people to call on them. But what they didn't do is they didn't play the game. They fell into the game and they fell in love. But it worked. The reason why they got together, why they partnered up together as in this business transaction, that completely worked. But as far as them two, they forgot to keep their feelings out.
Yes. And then next we are at the Opera House, and the interior was filmed at the Hackney Empire Theater on Mare Street in London. And we see Sienna singing while the audience is talking to each other.
Yeah.
Then she starts hitting her like high notes and she catches the audience's attention and eyes just go to her. And her eyes, too, are showing so much emotion. It's either...
She's really sad.
Yeah. And it's probably also like the effects of singing opera, too.
Yeah.
But she was... Honestly sad. I wonder if her aria was a sad aria. It'd probably make the whole scene so much better.
Yeah.
But she does finish aria and the crowd just applauds.
And if you guys notice here, she's not wearing her usual reds and blacks. She's wearing this gorgeous, gorgeous pink gown. And where did we see that pink gown before? It was for Cowper's daughter.
Yeah, because Genevieve did say that, oh, I can make you a dress out of her fabrics.
Yeah. So I like that they did this because, once again, it showed us the time frame, right? Genevieve told her that she can wear this for her performance the next month. So here she is wearing that dress again. So that even though it looks like it's only been like 2.5 hours on our end, it's showing us that by the end of episode one, Marina had been there over a month and she hadn't bled. Here we are in episode three. In the very beginning, she's like, I'll make you a dress that you could wear next month. So another month has passed by already too.
And when she was talking to Genevieve, she's like, you are not going to catch me in a dress that color. Like, I am not an innocent debutante.
Yeah. Yeah.
But at this moment in her life, she is vulnerable. Feeling certain things. Yes, exactly.
So vulnerable
and scared. Certain things even a debutante would feel until she finds a new protector. And until her feelings for a certain someone also, like, fades away.
Yeah.
And then we see Sienna in her dressing room tending to her face. Mm-hmm. The opera employee is informing her a gentleman is there for her.
She looks so hopeful.
Yeah. And Anthony is at the door and Sienna is quiet. And it's like her putting a wall up. There's just so much emotion in her eyes. And
you see a second of, like, huge vulnerability.
Yeah. I love her character.
I know, same.
And then she asks why Anthony is there and what is he escaping tonight. And Anthony just wanted to see her. And Sienna says she has her own plans. And Anthony is asking, are you going to see the Duke? And Sienna replies with, it's not your concern, tries to make Anthony jealous anyway. Anthony says, your vindictiveness is noted, but Sienna interrupts him and says that the Duke has not called. She is not consorting with any of his friends, just to give him peace of mind, like after he hurt her. And Anthony says he's there because he misses her and not because he's jealous, and he starts kissing her, and then she pushes him away.
The pain in her face, you could tell she misses him so much. When he was like, I'm not here because I'm jealous, I'm here because I miss you. And he starts like kind of like filling up on her neck and stuff. And just like the pain in her face, and like, how many times have we had to do that? Like, some we just literally had this discussion today. It's like, as soon as you're doing okay, there's some satellite beacon that sends text messages to your exes to let them know that, like, she's good. Go fuck her life up. Go, 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 go. Green light, go. And whether that's because you're in a good place, you're single, you're happy, or you're with a new person, and they just get this message, and there's this huge sign over your head that says, I'm fine without you, and they come back and be like, but I want you. Hello. it literally happens to everyone. Every single fucking time. It's just ridiculous. There's just this satellite that's out there that's just watching all of us and informing our exes when we're doing just fine without them. Yeah. Motherfuckers.
After she pushes him away, she's saying, your position in life remains unchanged, and so too does mine. You are the Viscount. Your responsibility will always be to that title above all else. You shall marry, sire, and heir, and guard your family. And I shall always be the woman you may love in darkness, but never in the light. You made me promises before, and I, like a fool, believed them. I cannot be your fool again. And she walks up the stairs and away from Anthony. And, like, Sienna has a better grasp of their positions, their situations. And I'm sure Anthony does too, but for her to say it out loud, like, she just knows where this is going. Especially with her position and who she is. Not just a woman, but, like, a mistress to her position is more vulnerable. And we keep saying that word, but that's just where she is.
Yeah.
And I love her for that. Her practicality and her strength. And Anthony is still lost, and it takes, you know, two women from different social classes to tell them that he's a Viscount, like, with responsibilities, and he needs to step up. That's what I got from that.
Yeah, no, I definitely think that we always look at illicit affairs and always think badly of the other person, not really thinking about the things that they go through too, you know. And Sienna said to Anthony, like, we saw in episode one, he was like, I will always be here to protect you. And within like four breaths, he's like, get out, you know, like, and she was homeless and she's still homeless. She's living in Genevieve's house and she's trying to find another protector, you know, and she was hopeful that it was going to be the Duke. She knows that that's the life that she has to live. And these gentlemen back then, they still kept mistresses after their wives, you know, but he flat out told her to just leave after making so many freaking promises to her. So yeah, she's just freaking over it because she, like she says, she knows her place in life. She knows where she stands. And she also knows where he is. He showed her that title will win. And then all the time, like every time he always has to leave for a sister or for a ball or for the mother or anything like that. Like, even though they were joking about it between her and Genevieve, there was like a lot of pain from that, yeah, you know?
There was truth behind it.
Absolutely. So,
and how they said it.
Yeah. So, you know, she's just really hurt, but it didn't mean that she doesn't feel some type of way for him. Like, you saw the pain in her face when he was like all right on her back, and but she's just like, no. And she's like, I gotta look out for me because you ain't.
Yeah,
so
exactly. Oh,
I love that. I loved her character. I love how strong she was.
They're very good with their expressions.
Yeah,
love it. Next, we're at the Featherington house. Penelope is looking outside again, waiting for the post, and she walks downstairs.
Oh god.
To footman and finds the Spain stamped letter for Marina, and then Penelope, excited, and runs up to Marina's room. Marina starts reading and her face drops, and Penelope is on the side like impatiently waiting, a smile on her face, and she knows something is wrong when Marina abruptly sits on the bed. And Marina explains the letter from Sir George, and he's pretending nothing happened, and he has no part of it. Basically, the child is her
problem.
Yeah. And Marina starts wailing while Penelope reads the letter. And in another room, Lady Featherington and Varley say their efforts have worked. And then you see this vignette of Varley mimicking Sir George's signature. And
fucking awful.
And Lady Featherington says, like, she did what was right and best, and she's now protected.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's horrible, but marriage means protection. Marina being married, even though she's with child, is more protection than hiding her away.
Yeah, unfortunately, things were just a lot different back then, you know? Like, I mean, even today, like single mothers is still kind of taboo, right?
Yes.
So imagine how it was to it. Like I said, a lot of things have not changed in 200 years, period. And when Marina was first reading the letter and she was just very distraught, Penelope said, "What is wrong? Is he injured?" Is a huge foreshadowing for later.
Oh, yes, yes. Mm-hmm. And then Lady Featherington basically acts like, that is that. And for Varley to draw her eyebrow arches
over. Fix my eyebrows, bitch.
So she doesn't look constantly astonished.
Yeah.
Then we're back to the Modiste, where Daphne is in a white dress and Genevieve is working on her hem. And Lady Cowper and Cressida is in the front shop. And Lady Cowper sweetly tells Violet how fortunate Daphne is that the Duke is taken by her, or else Cressida has no hope with the prince. And she says Cressida may have the dowry, but Daphne has the face.
Yeah.
Then walks back to Cressida, and The look on Daphne's face, she's like sad and she's worried knowing that no one knows yet. She doesn't have Simon as a suitor anymore. And then she sighs, takes a deep breath, and then she puts a fake smile on her face. Like, now she needs to get serious. She needs to do what she needs to do also. And then we're back at the Bridgerton house. Daphne walks in to her room with Rose trailing her with her new dress in a box. And Daphne tells her plans for what she's wearing that night and how she will look at tonight's ball with a white and silver dress. And Rose, she said, "You will look perfect." And Daphne says, "Good, that is what they want."
Yeah.
Referring back to what Lady Cowper said at the Modiste.
Mm-hmm. They're,
she has the face.
They treating her like the diamond in the first water. She gonna be a fucking diamond in the first water.
And then we see Anthony in a study working. Violet walks in while he's checking his pocket watch. And Violet asks if he's attending the ball. And of course, because he's the one who made reservations. And then Violet hands him a list with 14 single eligible young ladies' names on it. And Anthony said he shall consider her suggestions and goes back to working. And in the book, in book one, it is Lady Danbury's ball. And Anthony mentions to Daphne that Violet gave him a list of names.
I love it.
And he planned to bring it out in front of her and peruse the list, torture her. And just in a teasing way. And that was so funny. If you want to, if you can, go read that that scene. It's hilarious, actually. Very different from what we see in this scene.
Yeah.
Violet asks it, "What's the time? You're looking at your watch when I walked in." And she just keeps emphasizing the word time and saying it's time for Anthony to, you know, get married. It's time is certainly of the essence. And then she walks out.
Yeah.
And
very pointed comment.
Yeah. And like, kind of piggybacks on what Sienna is saying too. Earlier, she's like, "This is your position. This is what you're going to do." And Violet's like, "Okay, this is your position. Yeah, this is what you're going to do. But you're running out of time." Like, it's been a long time.
I think
coming.
I think as his mother, she knows his fear, and that's why anytime she's not particularly happy with him, she knows exactly what to say to get right into his fucking bones. Because she's basically knows that, like, I know that you have, like, time is a really big issue to you, that, you know, and so therefore, I'm gonna push your fucking buttons and keep talking about time because you're afraid of time.
Mm.
So because Violet knows all. That's why she just made that comment. She's like, "Okay, bye. You think about that."
And then we are at a ball, and it was filmed in the Great Hall of the historic Lay Court in Bristol. And we see hanging flowers, and it lowers to
gorgeous
the dancers. Yeah, I mean, even the flowers hanging on the walls, on the stairs. Jeez, that was a really nice ballroom. And then one of the dancers was Cressida and the prince. And the queen is like blowing her breath as she is looking bored.
She's not happy.
And then Lady Cowper says, "Princess in Cressida."
Oh,
it rolls right off the tongue, does it not? And she's just looking so proud and happy. Then the dance ends. And then we see Marina in yellow and the Featherington ladies. Lord Hardy approaches Marina for a dance and she happily accepts. As happily as she can.
Did you see she's not wearing the Eye of
George? The last time I think we saw it was when she was talking to Middlethorpe.
She was wearing it when she read the letter.
Oh, that's right.
Yep.
Penelope's face, she looks like she's worried or she's looking for something, like probably Scandal or Colin. And then Lady Danbury tells Simon he's been reserved all evening. And Simon tells her he's leaving England sooner than expected. It's time for him to go. And Lady Danbury sees through that and says, "You're foolish." Knowing he's leaving Daphne, not so much England.
Yeah.
Then we see Daphne and Violet. And Violet asks her, "Are you feeling all right?" She says, "Exceptionally." And then walks to the landing of the stairs. And everyone looks up, including the prince, and Daphne smiles and lifts her white fan to her chest.
Above her bosom.
We see the slow motion of Daphne.
Oh, that entrance, man. That fucking entrance. And Simon's face. He That's as close to a pout that you can get from a man. Jesus Christ. He was like, fuck.
And then you see the prince staring and Cressida is pissed.
Dude, she, oh my God. Yeah, she's so mad. The prince was like, bye, bitch. She's like, my future wife's walking down the stairs. Gotta go.
You know, and he walks and other people notices it too. The queen. And
the whole room.
Lady Danbury.
The entire room stops and stares and watches Daphne descend these stairs, fanning her bosom in this gorgeous white dress. Her hair, unlike any other time that she's ever worn it. And, you know, this bitch found out how to orgasm. She knows how to use her feminine wiles, like walking down those stairs. She had the biggest like flirty face, and oh my God, I love it.
And then Daphne sees the prince waiting for her at the bottom of the stairs. Penelope is behind the prince observing them.
She's just confused because she's like, but what about the Duke? You know, like everyone's kind of like, wait, what? Where did this come from? Because she's been with the Duke now for months. Right? We said that at least 1 month has passed in this episode. 1 month, you know, like it's been months. And then all of a sudden she's descending the stairs and she ain't looking at Simon. She ain't beelining for Simon like every other party. She's over here flirting with the prince out of nowhere. So she's just confused. Like, what? Like, why? Because everyone believes it's been a love match and with Simon. And now she's like, upgrade.
When Daphne was looking at the prince, like, directly and smiling, out pops Simon's left eyebrow. I'm wondering what's going to happen next. And the prince says he must simply have Daphne's first dance. He is just entranced by her, right? And she said it would be an honor. And then she drops her fan. The prince kneels and picks it up and hands it to her while Cressida looks like she wants to cry. And then the Featherington daughters are amused by the reverse bend and snap trick.
Yes.
And Simon just doesn't want to see the flirting happen. The queen is smiling, ecstatic.
Shit-eating grin. She's so excited.
Lady Danbury is not happy at all.
Violet looks perplexed.
Yeah, she's like what happened? Like, what's going on? Like, what about the Duke? While Daphne is handing her fan to her.
She's like, hold this.
I'm going to dance. And then Lady Whistledown says, could it be true? The season's diamond, even more precious and rare a stone than previously thought. For it now appears this treasure is set to join the likes of the Queen's ever so cherished crown jewels themselves. The Duke of Hastings, I hear, has left looking rather tongue-tied last night, as Miss Bridgerton seems to have finally grown tired of waiting for him to pose that all-important question. Or perhaps the young miss has simply traded up. At this point, Simon starts walking out of the room. Pissed. Like he can't watch it anymore.
He looks so sad.
No.
I felt so bad, but he deserved
it. But at the same time, like, he knows he had to do it, though.
Yeah, that's what you get.
And then Lady Whistledown says, surprising? Quite unreasonable? Of course not. After all, why settle for a duke when one can have a prince? And Simon looks back. Violet looks at Simon. Mm. Oh, she's sad for him. And then he leaves the room.
Yeah. And Daphne couldn't give a shit.
The way they were dancing.
She was like, she's been practicing this whole season about faking it, right? So she looks this guy dead in his eye, super intimate, the specific dance that they're doing. Literally no one, everyone is just watching. I mean, I'm sure men too, but us women, when we have this resolve that we're not going to look at someone, we're just going to focus on this and we don't care what is going on. She did it. She didn't even spare Simon a blink. And it was so good. And Violet just looked like, no. Yeah,
but they were a love match.
But I think she just saw the pain in his face and his eyes. Because Daphne didn't even spare him a look, at all.
And nobody knows what happened between the two of them. Yeah. So Violet has some questions.
Oh, yeah. Everyone has questions. Well, Lady Danbury knows. But.
No, Lady Danbury knows everything.
Yeah. And Penelope's just like, the fuck?
The thing I came.
Yeah, she's like, this is a great ball. This is amazing. But yeah, so good. So I remember when we first watched it, I was like, oh my God.
I remember thinking it's hard to watch this, but this is good TV.
No, I loved it. I loved the angst. I'm here for the angst. He deserved that. He did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I mean because by he's like having a coward. Good TV.
He was a coward. And Daphne, and yeah, she's like, I'm the diamond of the first fucking water. I just love the recent promo that they did. They're like, diamond of the first water. And he's like, this bitch right here, diamond. All the diamonds, all the water. I was like, oh my God, I love it so much when he did that. But yeah, so she's like, y'all want diamond of the first water? I got you, diamond first water. I'm gonna come in dripping in diamonds, looking pure as fuck. And
everyone was staring. And I was shiny.
I am not even going to look you at you at all because you don't exist because I was a convenience. So are you. Bye.
Oh, gosh.
I love that. Hell hath no fury like a woman scorned, right? Dead ass. So, well, that wraps up our episode for today. We love you guys. Thanks for hanging in there. We will be back next week. Breaking down the fourth episode, we're going to ask that question and we're going to try to answer what the fuck happened to that necklace. For our theory, you'll hear about it next week. If you're not following us, please follow us on Bridgerton 2000 on everywhere, Instagram, Twitter, as well as Facebook. And if you would like to email us, we love your emails. I love discussing theories with you guys. I've been discussing with a couple of you guys about our Genevieve theories. There's many. And I love it. I love it so much. And, you know, there's still some of you that don't believe that Penelope is who Penelope is still. So that's been fun to talk to you guys about as well, too. So always email us. We love reading them. We love talking to you guys. Thank you guys so much. Thank you for supporting us. Thank you for just all the love and everything. And yes. Another huge round of applause. Congratulations to everyone involved in the Bridgerton project. Got two nominations for Best Cast, Best Ensemble, and then Regé Jean Page getting two nods and two different awards. And you know what? I'm sorry. I'm just going to call you Lady Danbury because I want... And that's what I was saying. Like, I wish she could be my mother. You know, like, who doesn't want their Lady Danbury? So, congratulations.
You can
come at me, right? Yeah. Congratulations to Lady Danbury as well, too, for Best Supporting Actress in a TV Drama. So, I love it so much. It's so exciting. Award season is going to be so much fun. Fuck the Golden Globes. I hope everyone has a great week. We'll talk to you guys next week. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.